This is Playing with Fire. He's at the 20, the 10, the 5. Touchdown!
3 seconds remaining. 2-1. Shots up. It's good!
Here's the pitch, the swing. It's a long fly ball. It's going, going. It's gone! Revealing the secrets of the elite athlete. But be careful. You're playing with fire.
Today we'll continue our conversation with starting tight end of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Kyle Brady. An introduction to plyometrics. And are the meek just weak?
Freestyle. Hi, this is Dr. Bill Thierfelder. It's great to be back again with you with Playing with Fire. I should tell you, just call me Dr. Bill. Thierfelder is a really tough name sometimes to say, and when people first try, they stumble around with it. So Dr. Bill's good with me, and you can imagine what first grade was like for me, filling out those little forms and those circles. I was always feeling like I was behind. So today what we're going to be looking at is the whole idea of kind of anger, violence, sounds exciting, right? And we're going to look at that in different aspects of sport and life. This is a continuation of an interview we had in episode 1 with Kyle Brady. He's a tight end, starting tight end for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he has some awesome things to share with us.
I look at coaches in this whole thing, and the pros, it's a little bit different, as we know. It's not the same kind of relationship. It's much more of a business kind of relationship. But what role do coaches, or should coaches play in making sport a means for developing virtue? And how do coaches affect the players in the game?
Every level can be a little bit different. I mean, obviously, a coach who's coaching third and fourth graders is going to be handling and players a little differently than maybe he's dealing with adults. But at the same time, you're always a mentor. You're always a role model. You're always someone that young man or woman looks to, or young boy or girl looks to, as an example for how ought I to live, how ought I to think about this game and what it means. So it's a very privileged role, and a role that ought to be taken seriously by a coach at any level, and understanding that you have a very serious responsibility towards these young people, no matter what age they are, and that is to be that example, to be that mentor, to be that leader for them. And that's been one of the more discouraging things, I think, myself throughout my years as a player, is thinking that every level I'd go up, I'd experience much sharper and much better coaching, better ways of communicating and teaching, but that isn't always necessarily the case, unfortunately. So I think there's a great need for that, certainly in the coaching ranks.
And is that because of the pros, it really is more of a business-related approach? In other words, it's sort of seen that, look, you're bringing a service. It's kind of like hiring a lawyer or someone. You're bringing a service, we're paying you for it, and you're supposed to deliver?
Yeah, I think it can be. I mean, there becomes a very dollars and cents mentality, and a mentality of, I mean, it's said many times in our arena, it's about winning. It's about the wins and losses. There's very little to no talk about. This is about developing young men to be better men, to be more virtuous men, to be
right.
People who are more better, have it play a better role in our community, and looking out for the greater good. It's more about really the money and the wins and filling the seats and things like that that you always hear about. So I think that so oftentimes one of the first things to get lost is understanding what's really going on there, and it's like a mentor relationship, and one
right.
In which you're truly setting an example for that young person.
Well, is it possible, do you think, to not have the money, the fame, the power corrupt athletes? In other words, what is it that has to happen, and when does it have to happen in order for that not to occur, or at least to be less than we see it today?
Well, obviously, God will have to do a work in a lot of people's hearts, but we maintain hope that can happen. And I think sometimes it needs to begin, though, at the the minor league levels, I guess the farm teams. And when I say farm teams, I mean all the way down to the little leagues, because I'm not sure if you can expect a man or a woman to get into the professional ranks at 22 years old, and if they've been conditioned to believe that this sport means this, and it is about my pursuing my own glory, my pursuing more money, more prestige, whatever, many, many championships. I mean, if that's all it's about for them up until that point, you've got some deprogramming, in a sense, to go through. So I think if it can begin at the younger stages, then that's all the better. Then when they get there to where it's even more difficult to avoid all the many distractions and all the things that aren't should really be more ancillary, then you're in a much better position. But it's not an impossible task. I mean, if more people can be made aware of the fact that that's not what it ought to be about, and come to a greater understanding of that, then it's possible.
What's hot? You know, I was very fortunate growing up. I lived in the Bronx. You might say, well, I don't know if you're very fortunate growing up in the Bronx, but my dad was actually among many things. My dad was a great man, just, you know, really brilliant, smart, good person, kind person. And he had many very interesting jobs. You know, one of them was he was vice president of the New York Yankees. And for those that either people will love me or they'll hate me at this point. But my dad, you know, being with the Yankees, I got to be around professional baseball quite a bit. And the reason I bring that up is recently, I just a couple days ago, I was at a baseball game, and you know, the guy comes in, the catcher kind of pushes him a little bit. Suddenly there's this, you know, pushing and fighting and hitting with the glove, and suddenly both benches just completely empty and pour onto the field. Everybody's jumping on each other, punching each other. I mean, there's probably people biting and scratching and spitting on people down in the bottom of the pile. And I'm thinking, what is up with this? I mean, what is this thing about? And I'm trying to figure out, why is violence, you know, kind of dirty play, almost rationalized as somehow being good? You see it in games. I mean, you know, just the North Carolina Duke game, you know, the whole controversy over, you know, was it on purpose or not? And the craziness of it is it depends on which side you were on. So if you're on the one side, you say, well, no, I think it was a perfectly legitimate play. The other side saying, I was, you know, this was crazy. This is terrible. And if it had been reversed, you would have heard the opposite argument. So there's this sense of loss of what is really right and wrong. And, you know, really what I'm thinking is that, you know, for you, as you listen to this, I don't know what role you may have, not only just working, you know, in your own life, perhaps training as an athlete or working out, but maybe you're also a coach. Maybe you have an opportunity to work with people. And I really think it's important to emphasize that a coach really needs to be a mentor and a teacher first, and that he really needs to be instilling the virtues and giving reasons and really helping, you know, young men and women to know, what does it really mean to be a man or a woman? You know, how should you be living your life? And so I'll look forward to some of your feedback about that. What do you think about this whole thing of violence in today's sports? Praying Twice. This is Rescue Me by Zach and Sarah.
My heart today said, let's go walking like we used to. But I was busy, busy as sin. Gonna have to wait for another day. So you walk away. What am I supposed to say here now? Is there somewhere you can rescue me? Somewhere you can bring me home again? Somewhere you can rescue me? Rescue me, rescue me. It's all gonna be okay.
Draw me gently to your presence. But I've been headstrong, I've been a hard-hearted. Help me live my life a little more like you. You make all things new, but I've been struggling to stand beside you. Lord, is there somewhere you can rescue me? Somewhere you can bring me home again? Somewhere you can rescue me? Rescue me, rescue me, yeah. Somewhere you can rescue me. Somewhere you can bring me home again. Somewhere you can rescue me. Rescue me, rescue me. Is there somewhere you can rescue me? Rescue me, rescue me.
That was Zach and Sarah with Rescue Me. You can find them at podshow.com or check out our show notes at reclaimthegame.com. It's your call. I greatly appreciate hearing from you after each show, and I hope that you'll continue to send me your thoughts and your comments. You can do that by leaving your comments on our listener line at 206-203-1301, or you can write to me, email me at feedback@reclaimthegame.com, and I'll look forward to hearing from you. The one thing that people did mention to me is that they wanted to know a little bit about what is this scholarship, this thing, sport at the service of the Spirit. Well, you can find out the requirements for it and what it's all about by going to our website at www.reclaimthegame.com, and there's a section in there. You can look it up. But I can just generally tell you what it's about. It's really trying to change sport. That's the reason for this podcast, the reason for the website. It's seeing that, you know, there can be world-class performance, and we can do it with virtue, and in the end, we will be happier for having done it that way. And so I'm looking for individuals to certainly come to Belmont Abbey College that kind of share that same passion, that see sport as a means for developing virtue. And so that scholarship is a way of trying to encourage and reinforce that belief, and for me to try to attract those kinds of students to our college. So I hope you'll look into it, and I'll look forward to hearing from you soon. Skills and drills. In one of the first episodes, I talked about this thing called rate of force development, and it really had to do with how we move so quickly in athletics, you know, less than 3 milliseconds on the ground. And I had mentioned a term when I was describing that. I think I had mentioned stretch shortening cycle and this word called plyometrics. And those are something I'm going to talk about today to improve your physical performance. Plyometrics have been around for some time now. They were developed really first in the Soviet Union and by the Finnish scientists on how to actually help athletes develop this kind of power, explosive strength. Matter of fact, there's a Dr. Paavo Komi from Finland, and he was doing research. This is like kind of remarkable. This is when the Soviet Union was still a communist country. But he would actually take athletes and surgically implant a transducer, that is a little device that measures force, into the Achilles tendon of jumpers, like a long jumper. and they would actually be able to tell you exactly how much force was generated and how fast it was generated as people were actually performing. Now, in this country, I don't think you'd have people lining up to have their Achilles tendons operated on and have a transducer put into it. But in the Soviet Union, I guess they could compel you to do that. Matter of fact, as they were doing this research, I was reading this one journal one time, and I wanted to, you know, try to figure out what's the right height for plyometrics. You know, when you're doing these box jumps, you know, where you stand on a box, you jump off, and then try to explode up into the air, how high should the box be? And so I'm reading this Russian, you know, literature on how, you know, high they did it, and there's this one little paragraph that talked about they were experimenting themselves with the right height, and they said they went up to actually 10 feet. 10 feet. That's a basketball rim. And they make this little comment. I mean, they're not trying to be funny, but they make this comment of saying something that with the athletes, it was not without some encouragement to get them to take this jump. So you can imagine standing on a basketball hoop with your hands on your hips and being asked to jump off, hit the ground, and explode up. Well, obviously, those guys didn't explode up. They just went into the ground. So the idea here is, what is the right way to train? Now, what you have to keep in mind is that plyometrics seem pretty, they don't seem like they're too hard. All you're doing is standing on a box and jumping off. You know, that doesn't seem too difficult. But you have to be very careful, and you have to be prepared to actually do them, meaning you have to have the right strength. As an example, to do box drills where you stand on boxes, jump off, and explode up into the air, it's recommended that, you have maybe the ability to squat maybe 1.5 times your body weight or even higher. So if you don't possess enough what we'd call just basic strength, maximal strength, you have to be very careful about working your way into plyometrics. But I did them when I was at the University of Maryland, and they helped me tremendously. I used to do things like bounding. You know, bounding is where, in a sense, you're holding in the air and taking as far a distance as you can until your foot comes down the ground, then you explode off again. And again, you're doing this for distance, maybe down a football field. I used to do single leg bounding with a weight vest up the Maryland Stadium stairs, the football stadium, all the way around the entire stadium. And really, it was tremendous in terms of the leg strength that I gained. Matter of fact, when I got through, I was able to kick a goalpost with my foot, and I was able to kick a basketball rim. They're both the same height. They're both 10 feet, if you didn't know that. And I was a straddle high jumper, so that's part of why I could kick my leg up so high. But I was able to jump off the ground that high as well. So this plyometric work really does help. But the key to it is not to have fatigue. So if, for example, if you were even just standing on a 6-inch box with your hands on your hips, you don't jump off, you just sort of step off, or just like a little hop forward. And when you hit the ground, you try to explode up as high and as quickly as you can. And by doing that, you're beginning to train your nervous system, you know, the wiring from your brain to your muscles, to fire at a higher rate. And by jumping off the box, you actually preload your muscles, because when they hit the ground, they have to sort of accommodate you, and then you explode up into the air with all that stored up energy. And so if you want to learn more about plyometrics, a good source is the National Strength and Conditioning Association. I'll put a link to that website in our show notes. And I'll also, at a future episode, pick up on the upper body plyometrics, because it's the same kind of thing that you can be doing. So I hope this will be of some value to you as you continue to train and just get better every day. Iron Will. You know, sometimes when we talk about these mental skills, you know, the things that affect you psychologically, it's not always clear what we mean by that, but very often what you believe is what you feel or what your emotions are about. And I'm going to give you an example of what I mean. How often have you ever said, I need to do that, I have to do that, I must do that? We use those terms all the time. And sometimes we use them because we have to have an excuse as to why we want to do what we want to do. But we'll say, you know, I have to do that, or I need to do that. And this starts to build up. And when you're performing, if you believe that you need or you have to do something, it tends to create anxiety, which is worried, which is nervous, whatever word you want to use. That's what happens. So I'm going to give you a little example to show you what I mean. Let's say that you and I had an absolute rule, okay? Our rule was you had to have a dollar in your pocket at all times. Okay? So I tell you now that you only have 90 cents in your pocket. How do you feel? Well, most people would say, I don't feel too good about that because I haven't met the rule. You know, I'm supposed to have a dollar and I only have 90, so I'm not feeling too good. I said, well, okay. So let's say now you work hard and so forth, and you get a dollar. Matter of fact, you did a real good job. You got $1.05 in your pocket now. How do you feel? Person usually says to me, I feel a lot better now. Now I feel good. And I say, no, you don't. You think you're going to feel good with $1.05 in your pocket, but you know what? Can't you lose 10 cents? You might say, well, you're right. Maybe I need $2. Well, can't you lose $1.05? You know, you can keep going with this. And what you're going to find is that if you have to have a dollar in your pocket at all times, there's always going to be anxiety, even when you have the dollar in your pocket. Now, on the other hand, let's turn it around and let's just change the phrase. I want to have a dollar in my pocket. So that's our rule. You know, our desire, I should say. It's not our rule. Our desire is that we want to have a dollar in our pocket. So now I tell you, you have 90 cents in your pocket. And you say, well, I want a dollar, so I'm going to work till I can get, you know, 10 more cents so I have my dollar. Fantastic. Great. You're going to feel good. That's wonderful. On the other hand, let's say that you had $1.05 in your pocket. And I say, you know, well, you want to have a dollar in your pocket. You got $1.05. How do you feel now? You'd say, I feel great. And I agree with you. You probably would. So it sounds like we're just playing with words here, but words are powerful. And if you walk around believing that you need to do something, you have to have something, it creates anxiety and worry. So start to change things around. Be careful the word you use. You want.
Soul food.
Meekness. Boy, does that sound weak. What is that really? This word meekness, you know, when you hear that meek, ugh, you know, it sounds like, as an athlete, you know, to be meek, somehow it doesn't sound right. But really, I think first you got to understand what does the word mean? And that's part of the problem with these virtues I'm talking about is that these are things we should understand because, first of all, if there's a value in them, and it is the habit of doing good, that's what virtue means, and we want to perfect those in our daily life, then we got to know what they mean. If we don't, one, we're not going to use the word, and two, we're not going to be perfecting them in our daily lives, which means ultimately we won't be happy. So this meekness, what exactly does it mean? Well, really what it is, it's keeping anger from getting out of control. It's helping us to deal with an inordinate anger. So when we think of meekness, somehow we think of weakness, but they have nothing to do with each other. Meekness is basically saying, I'm in control of my emotions. And so therefore, I'm better able to use all the skills, talents, and abilities I have as I'm called into whatever it is that I might be doing. So very often you can say, well, why do people get so angry? You know, which is a lack of meekness. In other words, the anger is actually a vice. And today's world, you know, you look at sports, I mean, anger sometimes is looked as being kind of a positive thing, you know, like get angry. Matter of fact, you'll see many coaches who, you know, will yell and curse and get in the face of players trying to intimidate them. You know, that anger, what is it doing? I mean, if you have a world-class athlete, I don't care what you do to them, they're probably going to perform pretty well. But is that the best way to motivate somebody to get the best out of their skills, talents, and abilities? I don't think so. And what I tell you happens is that most people, it comes from frustration. Frustration is when you are trying to do something, you're trying to change in some way, and it leads us to anger when we can't do something about it. And so today's little, you know, lesson, if you will, or a little word of wisdom is look at meekness, maybe do some reading on your own. You know, it doesn't take much to go in and Google the word meekness and, you know, look it up and see what it's about. And then start to look at your own life and say, how does this help me to be a better person? And by the way, how does it help me to maybe be a better athlete? Because if I'm in a game and I don't allow another player to, in a sense, take control of me by getting me angry, I'm going to be a better player. And in the end, I'm probably going to, if I have the ability, I'm going to win. I'm going to do better than that person. So remember, meekness. Well, thanks for another great show. It's just amazing to me how fast these fly by. But I really would like to get your input because this show is about all of us working together. I need your insight, your leadership to help make it a better show. So if you contact me at our listener line, 206-203-1301, or you can write me, email me at feedback@reclaimthegame.com, and I'll look forward to seeing you soon or hearing from you soon. So take care, God bless, and remember, the meek shall inherit the earth.